All right, riddle me this, Kev. What's one of the first upgrades you should do to your vehicle? What is it? What do you go for?
Well, you might think power, but ultimately, from a smart and safe perspective, definitely the brakes.
Yeah, no doubt. Upgraded braking system can really transform a vehicle's performance and honestly give you better peace of mind behind the wheel in any situation. You know, from the track, the off-road trails, even the morning commute, every single vehicle deserves performance brakes at an affordable price.
And no matter what your vehicle or driving style, PowerStop has complete brake upgrade kits for you. So head to PowerStop.com, fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to be matched with complete kits and components that are low-dust, noise-free, and feature upgraded stopping power.
That's right. You could join the thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicle into a stopping powerhouse today with PowerStop. PowerStop.com, brake upgrades made easy. It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. Fired up to join you today, man. All kinds of coolness we're going to have on the show today. My man, how are you feeling about our guest? Some people get a little bit jealous when they find out who we're going to have on the podcast today. I'm just saying, some people get a little jealous.
Mainly us, right? I know I am fully jealous. This guy has lived...
Yeah.
He's lived the dream life, right? Every car dude, every racer guy has put themselves, right... Whether they're sleeping at night or during the day when they're supposed to be at work, dreaming about what this guy does for a living. We've got Cooper McNeil, one of the top race car drivers out there, won so many different events over the years. It's been really amazing watching him. So we brought him on. And his father is part of the whole WeatherTech phenomenon. Right? I think anybody that's ever watched TV or magazines.
It is a phenomenon, dude. It
you know,
really
has seen
is,
some of their amazing products.
It's crazy.
And then he's been the big sponsor for IMSA Racing for the last number of years.
Isn't it wild, man, how, honest to God, anybody that knows WeatherTech, you see them everywhere, and you know you're getting a legit straight eight. Like, that's a great, 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 great product. Nothing they make has ever been like, I don't know, WeatherTech just didn't meet or exceed my demands on this one. I don't know. They really do make great products. And out of that comes, you know, sort of that challenge to live up to that name, I'm sure. But the opportunity to be like the man, to go out and race and you know, further that brand and the world of racing and all that that entails. It's got to be some wild stories, and I can't wait to peel a couple layers back, look behind the curtain today and maybe get into some of those wild stories. But, you know, as a fan, as a racer, man, it's – dude, when you got a big sponsor and somebody that's focused behind you, it helps tremendously.
Oh, absolutely. But you got to know how to wheel as well, man. And this guy, Cooper, he's done it last year, 2023, 24 Hours of Daytona winner. GT3 class, awesome. Petit Le Mans, 3 times winner. 2 times at Sebring. He's been on the podium multiple times at the 24 Hour of Le Mans, like the big Le Mans, right? The one we all know. Right, Ferrari versus Ford Le Mans, not any other, but that one. Ferrari Challenge winner over and over and over again. Cooper, man, welcome to the podcast, dude. It's been quite a while since we've had you on. Super excited.
We should ask him if there's anything he's just won once.
No doubt. I mean, anybody that's watching us on like YouTube or any other, the background right now is just completely top to bottom, left to right, trophies. This guy's been killing it for how long? What, like 15 years you've been racing? Longer than that?
Yeah, Kevin, Willie, thanks for inviting me back on the show. Really appreciate being here with you guys again. Always good talking with you. But yeah, 15 years of racing under my belt, mostly in professional classes throughout those 15 years. But, you know, all washed up and retired now. Late 2022, November, December time, I announced that the 24 Hours of Daytona in 2023 was going to be my last pro race that I would ever do because of a few reasons. You know, mainly I just mentally, physically, emotionally had enough of the sport after being in it for 15 years and being around, you know, racing my entire life, much before myself being in a race car for the last 15 years when I was at the races with my dad. So, you know, kind of was on to bigger and better things after that. Got married last year. I'm expecting a boy in about 2.5 months.
Yeah. All right.
My man. Yeah,
so pretty excited about that. But yeah, so, you know, a month before Daytona announced that was my last race, and we ended up going out and winning in the GTD Pro class, which is the top GT3 class in IMSA at that race, which I consider one of, if not the hardest 24-hour races there is. Obviously, you've got the 24 Hours of Le Mans, which is extremely grueling. And Kevin, like you mentioned, was on the podium there three times, twice third place with a Ferrari, and then second place with a Porsche in 2022. So some special races and did well, but retired now and working full time at the company.
Bro, you about nice, to start man. Your biggest race. You got a boy coming. You about to start your biggest race ever, my man, ever.
Yeah, you thought racing was hard.
Kevin and I both have boys, and woo, man. You better watch out, brother.
I'm super excited, though. As soon as I found out it was a boy, I was obviously, you know, over the moon. My wife, on the other hand, was hoping for a girl, as I'm sure most women do. But yeah, so the boy's coming, and in June 25th is a due date. So I'm pretty excited.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. My boy's birthday is June 27th, man.
There you go. In good company.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, let's dive into it, man, because there's a lot of expectations there as well. Something you're somewhat comfortable with as far as, you know, what to expect, but your expectations all. Can't wait to chat about it, man. All right, Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Cooper McNeil. He is Kevin Byrd. I am Willie B. And we're back after the break. It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Byrd. I am Willie B. Today we're going to talk about a few things, man. So we have Cooper on. Now, Cooper's been just this hardcore racer, been at it for so long. You know, when you go through his laundry list of, you know, W's and everything on this, you know, the times he's been on the podium and, you know, two times here, three times this, five times here, made several podium appearances here, all this stuff, man. It's funny because he just broke the news to us. He's about to have a baby boy. So in the break there, me and Kevin were both teasing him, like, your biggest race is just getting ready to get started, my friend. It's going to be awesome. So that's got to be the most exciting news by far for you. You know, did you get the car thing, the car bug, probably from your dad, right? And what he created?
Yeah. So my dad raced amateur SCCA racing for probably close to 20 years. So growing up, obviously our family business is automotive related. So I was always around cars from that aspect, but also, you know, he was a big racer. So, 20 years in a club car, I spent a lot of the time growing up at the racetrack, watching him race, supporting him, and got the bug through him. And it, when it came time, for him to pass on the torch, it was a pretty seamless, transition. But funny story about it is when I was 5 years old, he bought me a go-kart to learn to drive in, as most of these, you know, hotshot Formula One drivers and these guys that have been racing their entire lives started in pretty much all of them started in go-karts. But funny story about my career in a go-kart was it was non-existent, because like I said, he bought me the go-kart when I was 5 years old, but wouldn't let me drive it because of how dangerous they are. So, yeah, a little strange. I don't know why he bought it, but maybe to tease me a little bit, I don't know. But anyways, when I was 15, I linked up with, a pretty famous guy in this country, in the racing world, Randy Popes. And
wow, yeah.
He was my coach and taught me how to drive. Yeah, he taught me how to drive, and so I just, when I was 15, I got in a 1992 BMW 325 IS and learned racecraft, learned car control, learned how to drive a race car at the limit and succeed, and then kind of just built up the speed from there and the cars from there.
Wow, so you're saying, you know, about 15 is when you first really kind of started to get into a, you know, any kind of limit handling. Because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's a driving age. But like you mentioned, for a lot of what you think of Formula One and other hotshots, right, you're thinking of them being in a cart, you know, at 3 years old, 4 years old, whatever, 5 years old. You know, just some young, early age where you're really kind of getting a lot of seat time before even that driver's license hit you. So you started about 15?
Yeah. Oddly enough, in order to obtain an SCCA regional racing license, you need to show proof of a street driving license first. Well, obviously, yep, we had some had some contacts through the racing world and through WeatherTech, and my dad was able to get me a racing license before I had a street license, which is quite abnormal. So yeah, I started in that when I was 15 and just running laps at the Audubon Country Club here in Joliet, Illinois, with Randy Popes, and just building car control, racecraft, and learning what to do and what not to do. And then just kind of dove into the deep end after that with Ferrari Challenge and Porsche Cup in 2011, and then started pro racing in 2012.
Wow. So, right, you had some probably reasonable gear and track and coach. So how fast, with all these things coming at you, right, all these things at your fingertips, how fast do you feel like you sort of ramped up on your learning curve? And then do you feel like you ever really stopped? Like, were you just...
Oh, the progression, I bet, was nuts.
Yeah, were you just kind of tapering off the last so many years, or were you just felt like it was still out there? Like, what does that curve look like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, luckily I was... Look, I had the support of my father. We had the I had the, you know, moral support, emotional support from him, but more importantly, financial support, because obviously racing cars is an extremely expensive, for most, a hobby. And for a few, a career. You know, tried to build upon, you know, the skills that I had, early on, just by watching my dad and learning his racecraft and watching him race, and then kind of put that to the test when I was 15 and had a, you know, natural talent for it, and had the support and the time to do it, as well. And so, just put in the time and effort and the hard work into just running laps, basically. You know, the way I've always said it is, you know, the more seat time you put in, the better off you'll be. So it was just about building seat time. And then, you know, was in some, you know, slower machinery, obviously, early on, but then moved into, you know, E46 M3, E92 V8 M3 shortly after that, after only about a year into it. And then was, you know, put into a Porsche Cup car, which is a serious race car. And then furthermore, a 700 horsepower Ferrari Challenge car back in 2011. And then, as I mentioned, you know, started racing pro series in 2012. So, you know, it, obviously there were some steep learning curves along the way, because, you know, if you don't know where the limit is, or if you don't find the limit, you'll never be quick in a race car. You'll never know where the limit is. So in order to find the limit, you have to cross it. So, you know, every race car driver's bent their fair share of sheet metal and you know, hit concrete walls and tire walls enough times to learn how to go fast and how to not go too fast. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a few hiccups along the way, but still the support from my dad, even though it's expensive when you do those, make those mistakes. But, you know, obviously, as you can see behind me, it turned out well.
Yeah, man. That's a steep learning curve, you know?
Yeah. Imagine you're kind of young gun in a wild field of cars. Like, you know, you're probably showing up there at a pretty young age, but with all this set of skills that you've been tuning in and harnessing and, you know, sort of crafting your discipline, was it always kind of weird that you were probably looked at as one of those kids, like, man, I don't know, he's such a kid. You think he's got the seat time experience until you got out there and proved yourself? It probably had to be a wild little battle there.
You know, Willie, it's funny you mention that, because that strikes a chord with me that I just remembered. When I first started, I started in SCCA amateur racing, but not only that, here in Chicagoland area, there's a racing series called Midwestern Council, very small racing series. And I remember my first race, I was, 15 years old, and it was at Black Hawk Farms Raceway in Rockford, Illinois. If you guys know where that is, I feel bad for you, but this tiny little racetrack, tiny little place. And there were a few gentlemen that were in my class that after they saw the times I was posting in practice and qualifying, tried to protest me from racing in the race because I was dangerous because of how fast I was going and how little experience I had. Well, their protest didn't go too far, needless to say. And you know, I got a waiver to do the race, and you know, kicked all their asses and won the race, which was
right, comical. Exactly.
But yeah, no, I mean, early on, Willie, they definitely were like, you know, what is this kid doing here? And you know, I mean, that goes, I'm sure, with every young racing. I don't want to call myself a prodigy, but somebody that's quick in a race car at a young age.
Yeah.
I'm sure they get looked at the same way with all these guys that have been doing it for, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And then they come out and beat them and you know, they're a little upset about
like,
it.
Kind of wait funny. A minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, man. Well, big ups on you for packing a punch. Remember in the infamous words of Kid Rock, it ain't unless you back it up, right? And you're definitely backing up.
Yeah.
Backing up all the you know, the worries and or issues that somebody might have or bring up when you pass them.
No doubt. So exactly. Because you had such a fast ramp up rate, right? Lots of things are being thrown at you. Different tracks, different types of, you know, different tracks, super, you know, super speedway kind of things to real tight chicanes. So you got big speeds, you know, different types of, you know, turns and hills, and then you're jumping up in horsepower numbers. Any of those along the way just really kind of throw a curveball at you, or were you able to just kind of battle through all of them? Was there any moments where you're like, holy sh, you know, I didn't really expect, you know, the wide open speeds at this track, or, you know, once I got into this class, it was just banging fenders and trading paint?
Well, you know, there's one, you know, aside from the 24 hours of Le Mans, but that I've done 9 times, been on the podium there 3 times, you know, that race is kind of in its own category. But one specific memory that comes to mind right away is racing at Nürburgring. I did a 6-hour VLN race there in 2009 with Randy Popst. And that was very early on in my career. I mean, you know, maybe year one or two, something like that. Yeah, year one or two, or super early on. So, all right, we're going to the longest racetrack in the world. Probably one of the most difficult racetracks in the world because of its longevity, how long it is as a track, 180 turns or something. I don't even, it's ridiculous. Something crazy like that.
Yeah.
And I remember doing, you know, in order to qualify to do the race, you had to do a test weekend before a week before the race to qualify. And I remember doing all of that. Well, actually before that, doing simulator work and then doing all the test days and then going to the race week and doing all the practice and then getting into the race. And I remember my last basically lap or two of my final stint in the 6-hour race. I finally was like, okay, I got this. I know where I am. And then I was done. So,
wow.
You know, and that's kind of the polar opposite. And then you go to a place like Lime Rock where it's 7 corners and a mile long. So, you know, Nürburgring for sure was one of those where I was like a little bit intimidated, not a little bit, but very intimidated because of how early it was in my career. And how sophisticated and difficult that track is. But, you know, I ended up having a good time. We finished the race. We had a couple issues, but, yeah, it was a great time and I learned a lot from it.
So was that kind of a milestone, do you think, looking backwards, where right once you've, let's say, conquered, whether it's mentally or anything else, once you've conquered something like a 6-hour Nürburgring, you know, where you, I don't know how you can even memorize the track. You know, you have some of it in your head, and as you're going through, I imagine you're like, oh, I forgot about this section. You know, like, but once you've conquered that, did it just kind of build that confidence to say, I can do anything from here?
Well,
bring it on.
Yeah, it definitely did, but not only because, you know, I did fairly well, but because of where it was. You know, you see all these modern purpose-built racing circuits that are around the world these days, especially the Formula One courses. They have huge runoff areas. You know, the walls aren't very tight. Lots of room for mistakes, but the Nürburgring, it's the complete opposite. There's no room for error, no room for mistakes, super high consequence. And the big issue with that place is a lot of the fast corners look like a lot of the slow corners, and obviously vice versa. So if you get it wrong, you get it wrong big. But yeah, after we were done with that weekend, I felt pretty good about my, you know, that kind of catapulted my endurance racing career into what it is today, you know, so to say. But that was definitely one for the memory books.
All right, man. You mentioned that enduring racing career, that endurance racing stuff. We're gonna come back, talk about that after the break. I want to know a few things. What do you got to do to get in shape? A lot of people don't understand that in a race car, there's arm pump, man. There's, you know, I race motocross. I race, you know, cars. I do time attacks and you know, SRC stuff. It's kind of wild what you got to do just to, you know, for your body and conditioning. I'm sure that was a big factor. Plus a few other questions about endurance racing. We got a break now, though. It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He's Kevin Bird. I'm Willie B. And we'll see you right after the break. It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. And we have our man Cooper on right now. Cooper, you know, we were just talking about racing, man. And you mentioned endurance racing. A lot of people don't realize with endurance racing comes an amazing amount of conditioning. I know, man, when I do little time attacks or, you know, things like you know, just beat up the road course we got up a few miles down the road for a full day, you're physically beat, man. You're tired. You have arm pump you got to deal with, your hands, shoulders, your feet. Like, you're getting thrown around. What kind of conditioning are you doing for endurance racing, bro? Because that is much tougher than what people, I think, just perceive it to be on the outside, you know?
Oh, I know all too well, Willie. The sad part about it is, you know, people are like, oh, you race cars. I can do that. I race a car, or I drive a car every day. Like, I can race.
Yeah.
You know, you have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. And those kinds of people, it's hard to even have a conversation with about it, let alone an argument. But no, I mean, you know, you do these endurance races, 10 hours of Petit Le Mans, 12 hours of Sebring, 24 hours of Daytona, 24 hours of Le Mans. At Le Mans, it's mandatory three drivers and maximum three drivers. So you're in the, by the time you get out of the car and get something to eat, maybe get a little massage from the physio and try and put your head down on the pillow, the knocks at the door to come back to the pits for your next stint. So it's pretty grueling. But 24 hours of Daytona, you're allowed four drivers, which is great. So you get a little bit more rest. 12 hours of Sebring, same thing, three drivers. Now,
I don't mean to interrupt you, Cooper, but a lot of people don't realize you're talking very little rest, right? Very little energy, and you're traveling at how fast? You're trying to control this car amongst other cars in a grueling race, fighting whatever the environment's throwing at you, the conditions, weather, tires, other cars, debris on the track. And you're doing this all, like, you know, for people that don't know, you're like, you know, there's times where you're holding your breath and you're pushing everything and you're fighting the car and stuff shaking like this. And, you're like, you know, it's just like a rigid, tense, you know, position to be in for hours on end, very fatiguing, very consequential to your body, your mental focus. So to say, oh, you know, you barely get any shut eye and then you got to go back in it. I mean, you're riding the edge every corner, every minute, every lap. That's hard to stay focused for that long, man.
Yeah, super fatiguing. And the thing about it is, you know, back in the day, you know, racing, endurance racing was about getting to the end and about finishing, because the cars would break all the time. Nowadays, the machinery is so reliable that every single lap in these 24-hour races, 10-hour races, 12-hour races, 24-hour races, is a qualifying lap, because the cars are so reliable and they don't break. They don't. I mean, it's very rare. Obviously, you know, they're mechanical, you know, things happen. But by and large, these cars, these modern GT3 spec machinery, they don't break. So every lap is a qualifying lap, which is extremely taxing on the body. Not only from a fatigue cardio standpoint, but also heat endurance. So, you know, I've been at the 12 hours of Sebring in March, and it's 95, 100 degree ambient temperature outside. It's 130 degrees inside the car, and you're in the car for anywhere from 1 to 3 hours at a time. running qualifying lap after qualifying lap after qualifying lap, which means you're pushing the car to the edge of disaster, but just before it, so you don't go off and crash. And that's how you maximize the lap time in the race car.
Right.
And that's how you win these races.
Yeah, there's a whole mental side of that fatigue as well, right? Not just from the lack of sleep, but it's, you know, both you and Willie are pointing out, you are so mentally focused on every corner, every jostle, where every driver is, that it's just got to be draining by the end. Now, do you find, because anybody, first of all, that's never been in one of these type of cars, you've got slicks, which means your G-forces go up. You've got massive downforces, which mean your G-forces go up. You got banked turns, which G-forces again. So the amount of forces acting on your body is incredible. Do you know what kind of G's that you'd be pulling back and forth in different directions?
It depends on the car and the racetrack, but I've seen 3.5 G's in a GT car before, pushing 3.8 G's. And back to what you were saying, Kevin, is, you know, it's super difficult, and there's so much, it's sensory overload essentially. You know, if you're doing these qualifying laps, lap after lap, and you're the only car on the track, that's difficult enough. But you put 60 other cars on the track with you at the same time, and a lot of them are faster than you because they're prototypes. So they're in a different class, a higher class of race car, and they're passing you all the time. You know, it's just mentally extremely draining. Oh. And after 15 years of doing it, is one of the reasons I retired from racing, is because I was just mentally, physically, and emotionally, for that matter, you know, done with the sport. Because, you know, you can go from, you know, the highs and lows in racing are the highest and lows I've experienced in my life. You know, you can be two laps down at the start of a 24-hour race and come back to be on the lead lap, and with an hour and a half to go, you're in second place catching the leader and looking like you're going to win the race, and then you have a mechanical failure, which that very scenario has happened to me before. And so, you know, it's just a very mentally grueling sport.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, endurance racing is ugly, man. It's ugly. You know, it's got such a big reward factor at the end of it because it was such a challenge. But, man, all those hours, all that time, all that, you know, all of that effort, and it can be lost at the last minute, which is, for so many on your team and that support you, that's so rough, man.
I never really thought about it like that. Like chasing, like you just said, chasing somebody down for 24 hours, right? You're like, I got to catch that sumbitch, you know? Like you're just trying to get a couple seconds every now and then to just over 24 hours get on their tail, and all of a sudden, like that, it could be over, right? Somebody can just take you out, right? One false move, a mechanical failure, right? 24 hours, how much time you've spent, and then done, right? And that doesn't even count all the lead-in.
Yeah, and then the blink of an eye, it's over. You know, I mean, no, you're not to mention it costs about $1 million to do the 24 hours of Daytona, so it ain't cheap by any stretch of the imagination. And you know, you see, you know, you watch Daytona, and at the end of the race, you've got, you know, 10 cars on the lead lap because of how reliable the machinery is. And you got 10 cars fighting to win the race at the end of the race. And that's why they hand out free Rolexes at the end of the race for the winners, because of how difficult it is to win that race.
Do you have a pinnacle moment that just kind of will stick with you forever? Like a particular race or something that happened during a race that's your takeaway? That's kind of a defining moment, or you probably have many of them with you know, all these different victories, but does one or two stand out?
Yeah, I got a lot of them. I mean, I've won Petit Le Mans 3 times, which is a son of a bitch to win. I mean, that race is so difficult, and pitch black at night, and all this elevation at Road Atlanta, and it's super difficult. I mean, 3 times on the podium at Le Mans, 1 Daytona, 1 Sebring twice, but you know, one year at 24 Hours of Le Mans that really comes to mind. That was early on in my Le Mans career, I believe my second or third time doing it. At Le Mans, you have to have 3 drivers in the car. You can have in the AM category, You could have a pro, so he's a platinum or gold driver, then a silver driver, which was myself, and then a bronze, which is like a gentleman driver.
Is that dependent on the clubs that he goes to?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Just yeah, never right? mind. Never mind. We can joke. We can joke. Sorry. Go ahead.
So this was 2016. So our bronze driver crashed the car Thursday in practice and knocked himself out when he crashed. The car was totaled. It was a Porsche RSR, and knocked himself out. So the team had to find a new tub, a new chassis overnight, and rebuilt the car overnight to start the race on Saturday. And we found a replacement bronze driver, but the sanctioning body at Le Mans wouldn't let us put the bronze driver in the car to race because he didn't have any practice that week, even though he had done the race six times. So anyways, just nonsense to me. So we had to move up in a category to the pro category, and we were forced to do the race with just myself and the pro driver in the car. So two drivers, 24 hours of Le Mans, and we ended up finishing fifth in the pro category. So that was one hell of an achievement for myself. But I did 11 and a half hours in the car total.
Wow.
And you know, could barely walk for a week after that because of the back pain. And I'm like, you know, why am I doing this for fifth place? Right. But you keep at it. And then I get on the podium three times. So, I mean, it's worth it.
Wow. The steps you have to go through. It's not all glitz and glamour.
No.
You know, there's a lot of hard work in there, you know, year after year after year, race after yeah. race. Wow.
So the big question is, are you going to encourage your kid to race? If he's into it, are you going to be like, yeah, man, you going to encourage your kid to race? Hey, this is what I'm torn on because I'm a motocrosser, and I'm torn right now because my kid wants to get on a dirt bike. So me himself, I'm like, man, I don't know if I should let him, like, encourage him to be a dirt bike racer or not. I'm like, ooh, I don't know because I hurt myself so often.
Yeah, sure. You know? Yeah, I mean, you know.
You know, I made it to pro. I I got some trophies and hardware yeah. and stories, but do I encourage my kid to do the same thing? I don't know, man.
I mean, at least in a race car, you have a roll cage and a seat belt, you know, a harness and a roof and a windshield around you. And I'm on a motorcycle, you know, a dirt bike. You don't have any of that.
No.
But you are going 185, yeah. 190 miles an hour, too.
Yeah, there is that. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we'll see. You know, I poured my life into racing and have spent the last 15 years at a racetrack and loved pretty much every minute of it. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm undecided on that. I gotta think about that some more and talk to the boss.
Yeah. Well, let us know what she says.
Speaking of your other boss, your dad per se. So you are transitioning big time into going into the business, the family business. And we've had a lot of great sometimes interactions. I've gotten to know your dad over the years. So, you know, from Two Guys Garage, we've been behind the scenes, you know, at your plant, how you guys make stuff. It's really incredible what your dad's built. Tell me, how excited are you to be kind of getting full time into this? What's your ideas? What are you thinking?
Kevin, I'm going to answer your question honestly, because that's what I do. I'm honest and open. And, you know, working for a family business has its pros and cons. You know, it's difficult. Obviously, I wouldn't trade it for the world because, you know, the opportunity that I have at my fingertips is unparalleled. I mean, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to work for not only a family business, but a company that my father's built, like WeatherTech. And I'm, you know, and grateful to be able to do that. You know, it has its trying moments, but, you know, things are going great. I'm working in our product development sector of the company, and, you know, which entails basically not only auditing new products on cars, you know, sitting in on product development meetings and coming up with new product, future products for the company, none of which I can tell you about. You know, I don't spend every second of every day at a desk, which I love, you know, especially being at a racetrack for the last 15 years. Being at a desk from 9 to 5 for me would be would be, you know, I'd rather, you know, stare at the wall, than do that, which is essentially staring at the wall, but, you get my point. So, you know, it's going well so far, and we're, you know, the company itself is doing well and innovating, you know, the aftermarket automotive accessory, business. And we, you know, we strive for excellence and we really focus on American, everything. You know, we hire American workers, we buy American machinery, we use American raw products. We do everything here in America instead of outsourcing it to some company overseas to save, you know, 50 cents or a dollar on a product and make more money. So we really, you know, really focus on supporting our economy, which, obviously is struggling a bit these days, but, we're trying to do our part and I'm trying to do my part as well.
Well, I have no doubt if you take just a little bit of that dedication that you put into racing all these years, right? That you were just going to crush it in your new adventure here with WeatherTech. So we have absolutely, like I said, enjoyed working with you guys over the years. Super excited to see you kind of jumping on that team, right? Being part of the bandwagon and being part of creating the next, you know, wave of new products. So, man, we're going to stay in touch. I want to see what you're doing over there and what you're getting out the door over there. So very cool, man.
Yeah, thank
man.
You.
If I ever see you, Cooper, if I ever see you, we're racing go-karts, bro. That's what's going down. That's
probably what's win, going honestly. Down.
Me and Coop, let's go, man. It's on.
Me being 6 foot five and 210 pounds in a go-kart really don't mix, but I'll
bro,
give you
I'm 6'2", 225. So
we got a welder. We got welders.
So I'm with you.
We can modify stuff, man. We'll get you a stretch.
I'll give
version.
You a run for your money. I'll Let's give you a run.
I bet you will. I bet you will.
Right on, Coop. Right on, man. Hey, don't forget about our show, Aaron Weekends on the Motor Trend Network. Check your local listings. It's a great resource. Always hoping you learned something on the show. Thanks to our guest, my man Cooper. Awesome catching up with him. Producer Scoop, executive producer Bob Ecker. He is Kevin Bird. I'm Willie B. And this is the Two Guys Garage Podcast.
Yeah, check out our website too at twoguysgarage.com. We're on social everywhere at Two Guys Garage. The Two Guys Garage Podcast, it's a copyright 2024 Brenton Productions Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Right on, man.
Well, Coop, man, some great stories.
Sweet.
I bet you have miles and miles deep of those.
Yeah, I got a few. I got a few.
Thanks for sharing,
No problem,
man.
Guys. Anytime.
All right, man. Well, you take care. Take care of that fam. Congratulations. We'll catch everybody on the next Two Guys Garage Podcast. See you, buddy.
Two Guys Garage Podcast is a production of Brenton Productions. For more episodes, visit iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.